You're about to hear my conversation with Leslie Marks, the CIO of Equities at McKinsey. We talk all about her views on the recent week, what's happened, what's caught her attention, the state of the U.S. and Canadian consumer, what's going on in China with equities, as well as her outlook for 2024. I hope you enjoy. This podcast is for informational purposes only. Information relating to investment approaches or individual investments should not be construed as advice or endorsement. Listeners should seek professional advice for their situation. Welcome to Market Exchange, a podcast from McKinsey Investments. I'm your host, Matthew Schnurr, and I'm delighted to be back with the CIO of Equities, Leslie Marks. Leslie, welcome back to the podcast.
Great to be here once again, Matt.
I thought we'd get the conversation started today with a question about the past week. It seemed quite quiet on markets this week. We didn't have significant news or lots of volatility. What did you notice this past week, Leslie?
You're so right, Matt. It really did seem pretty calm and quiet. I mean, I guess unless you were a Bitcoin investor, which certainly continued to gain attention. And this is really post the launch of the ETF in the US.
Right.
And I was looking back at the previous highs, which hit in November 2021. And of course, this week we are within reach of the previous highs. And a lot of people are talking about this because technically that would be a really big move to surpass previous highs like we have on the S&P 500, for example. And the only thing that makes me a little bit nervous about this trend is the difficulty in deriving a fundamental value, which makes momentum really the dominant factor in price performance.
Right.
And of course, right now that momentum is very strong. Just as an indicator of sentiment, clearly sentiment is very bullish on this basis. And as I said, the last time Bitcoin hit these levels or peaked in 2021 in November, it was only a month later that the S&P also peaked. So you can see the connection there to sentiment. And I just am watching closely as a measure to say, like, is this going to create a headwind for the S&P if we see Bitcoin sort of hit a ceiling and start to sell off? Because momentum is very strong.
Interesting. So Bitcoin, you're almost using as a proxy metric to measure sentiment or a different input to measure sentiment of the overall stock market, but clearly it's lacking fundamental within that. Is that, do I have that framed correctly?
Yeah. Like I think there's some sense of fundamental support, particularly related to demand as it connects to the availability of an ETF in the US. But I do think in general, Bitcoin has always confounded people who focus purely on fundamentals and in trying to come up with a fundamental value for Bitcoin specifically or cryptocurrencies in general.
Perfect. Maybe moving something closer to home, near and dear to Canadians, we did see the Canadian Q1 bank earnings come out. I'd guess that bank earnings are at a very good proxy for the Canadian economy in general. What are your thoughts from what you saw on the banks?
Yeah, now talk about two extremes, you know, moving from something where we're definitely challenged to look at fundamentals to something that's all about fundamentals. And you talked about the importance of the banks in the Canadian economy and as an investor or as just a Canadian in general, we look at the Canadian banks as an indication because of their importance in availability of credit for the average Canadian. They're also a very large employer when you aggregate up the big six banks across the Canadian economy. So there's kind of two areas that I focus on when it comes to the Canadian banks as an indicator for health in the Canadian economy. When I look at the five-day trend in stock prices, so just very high level, that's probably a good indication of where things played out as far as earnings go. Generally, earnings were overall upside surprise or as expected to upside surprise, except for one exception. BMO's earnings were a little bit disappointing. And some of the trends that I observed in pouring through the earnings and the commentary was, first of all, some of that upside surprise coming from increased trading revenue. And when I reflect on, so this is the bank's first quarter Q1 earnings, I should say, which ended end of January. So that took into account November, December, and January. And obviously November and December, when we got the big Fed pivot, and people started to get excited about the prospect of lower interest rates, trading volumes really took off and markets surged higher, both in equities and bonds. So when markets are surging higher, volumes tend to follow. So that was one factor that was important, and capital markets is a very cyclical business. So seeing that surprise on the upside is a good sign of things to come. The second thing, which is would be fairly obvious to most investors, was higher loan loss provisions. And that really speaks to the Canadian economy specifically. And when you look at the context of where they are today versus where they were a little more than a year ago, they've basically doubled, just so by order of magnitude. And that really gives you a sense of the impact that higher interest rates are having on the Canadian economy. So some signs of a little bit of growing credit stress, but we would expect that given the interest rate sensitivity for the average Canadian. I guess the last thing I would point to is that I'm guessing that our Bank of Canada Governor Tiff Macklem is probably also poring through these results, looking at the comments, commentary from the Canadian Bank CEOs, looking at their results and how higher rates are impacting the average Canadian. And I think next week we're going to hear from the Bank of Canada with their rate decision on March 5th. And although I'm guessing that there won't be any, we won't see an interest rate or a policy rate cut at this meeting, we'll certainly be looking for clues of whether they're seriously considering cutting the policy rate at the next meeting, which is in April. And I'll be looking to see if there are tidbits that are pulled from what the Canadian banks are saying and things like higher loan loss provisions and credit stress in informing the Bank of Canada, outside of just, of course, looking at the inflation rate, which the average person tends to think, you know, the Bank of Canada is solely focused on. Right. They obviously have to aggregate a whole bunch of data points. And so Canadian bank earnings will certainly provide some more information and data for that decision and upcoming decisions into the future.
So maybe to extend that view, and when we're focused on Bank of Canada, I noted that their Canadian GDP numbers came out. There was a bit of an upside surprise. In my mind, that would give the TIF Macklem the ability to not raise interest rates potentially for longer, or not be nearly as dovish at the next rate day. What's your view on that?
Yeah, so I mean, it's only one data point. It happens to be coming right before the meeting next week. So it's probably going to support the decision that was already in play, which was, as I said, to stand still with the policy rate. I tried to double click on the number. It was an upside surprise for the fourth quarter, certainly above consensus expectations, and more importantly, in the context of the Bank of Canada, higher than their most recent forecast as well. Right. Recall, the Bank of Canada was expecting that GDP was going to pick up in the second half of this year. So I don't know if this number is an anomaly. Interestingly, a lot of the upside surprise came from increased exports. And that's kind of an ode to stronger economies with our key trading partners, namely the United States. So I do think that there's some messaging in the GDP number, and it probably just supports what the Bank of Canada was going to do, which is nothing anyway. One more thing I should mention that I did also pick up on in the GDP report is that compensation of employees grew at I think around 3% annualized, which is certainly a marked slowdown from earlier trends. And that highlights that wage growth is slowing quickly. So that's an interesting data point because of the role that wage growth, not directly but indirectly, plays in inflation. As people feel like they have more money, there's higher propensity to spend, there's less price sensitivity. So wage growth slowing should have, in some sense, some downward pressure on inflation, which we definitely want to see.
Right, right. Makes a lot of sense. Maybe moving south of the border now, we're sort of at the tail end of earnings season. In my mind, the clear topic out of earnings season was NVIDIA a few weeks ago, where I'm sure everybody's aware of just the magnitude of their earnings move. What else are you seeing outside of that, or have you seen most recently?
Yeah, so I mean, NVIDIA is in the sector that happens to have a massive secular trend helping boost demand and growth for the company's products. And as we've seen, artificial intelligence has really moved into the mainstream, and their customers are ordering from them hand over fist, if you will. And I think for investors, most investors, they know that this trend is the growth rates are not sustainable over longer periods of time. I'm talking about more than something like 3 to 10 years, but hard to know when that starts to slow. So, but incredible growth that we're seeing there. Now, looking at more steady state businesses, one interesting one that we saw this week was Lowe's, and Lowe's came on the back of Home Depot's results the week before. I would say both had, maybe Home Depot more than Lowe's, a slightly disappointing outlook. But one thing I found really interesting, and this really ties into what I would refer to as post-pandemic normalization, is obviously both companies had really outsized growth during the pandemic. Sure. And then they went through a year of pretty significant drop off in demand for their products. And what I think we're seeing signs of, and why I think the stocks are holding in nicely here, despite the fact that the outlook isn't so great, it's very modest growth, and that would be very much in contrast to market darlings like NVIDIA. But I think the market is kind of feeling okay with that, because what we're seeing is that normalization in key consumer discretionary names that had this roller coaster of feast and then famine post pandemic. So that makes things a lot easier for people forecasting and looking out into generating their future expectations of the value of companies in the consumer discretionary space. And that's a really good thing for investors. They like stability. They like to be able to project out earnings growth on a fairly steady state. And so I think it opens up opportunity in the consumer discretionary space for investors, where they shouldn't get hit with those big swings that we've seen both in results and, by extension, stock price performance.
Maybe you referenced consumers and consumers stepping in there. You also talked about Canadian wage as part of your GDP coming in and sort of moderating, but at levels that aren't terrible either for workers at 3% annual gains. I'm curious about the U.S. And the consumer in the U.S. How are they doing generally, and how are they holding?
I'm glad you asked that question, because the U.S. consumer is such a key part of course, the U.S. economy, but how the U.S. overall, the U.S. stock market does, because consumer is a big sector for the S&P. And I think in general, we've seen pretty good resilience from the U.S. consumer, even in the 3 to 4% wage growth range. That's still a good wage growth. It exceeds inflation as we see it today, or it's certainly in line with inflation. And so the consumer continues to show resilience. My only note of caution was, and again, I don't want to, I like to separate out noise and signal from data points, and this one could turn out to be a little bit of just noise. But we did see today the Michigan Consumer Sentiment Index, which edged a little bit lower in February. And it's a bit of a head scratcher. And I'm trying to think through what could have caused that. So thinking through, like, what is different in February versus January for the consumer in the survey? And the only thing that does come to mind is that we did see in January an upside surprise in inflation data in the U.S., and that can really impact consumer sentiment if there's concerns around inflation. And of course, that would translate into higher interest rates. So I'm wondering if the fact that there has been a lot of ink spilled on the stickiness of inflation in the US, that consumers are starting to pare back their expectations for rate cuts this year. And that's what's causing a little bit of an overhang on consumer sentiment versus what we have seen.
Well, we'll continue to watch and see if that turns into more signal or more noise. So, but thanks for flagging it. I guess maybe one final stop sort of around the world during this conversation. If we move to Asia and the outlook for Asian equities, certainly it was a pretty tough macro picture, particularly Chinese equities and the sentiment towards them. But we've seen the Hang Seng and Shanghai composites bounce 10% off the bottom. What's your outlook from here?
Yeah, it's been great to see things move in a different direction for Chinese equities. And it's clear that the Chinese government is, you know, in a fiscal and monetary sense, is certainly trying to help support and stimulate the Chinese economy. And that makes sense, given obviously the weakness that we've experienced. And they've publicly stated that they would maintain a pro-growth stance in 2024. There have been two primary headwinds, just to remind people. One is the weak property market, and the second is consumer sentiment. Seems to be creating a headwind as well and has been a bit disappointing. That's also in contrast to basically the rest of the world, where the consumer has been overly optimistic. Earlier today or overnight, we saw the China factory activity, and it did contract a little bit for the fifth month in a row. So this is Chinese PMI, Purchasing Managers Index. It edged lower and it remains below 50, which is thought to be in a contractionary state when that number is below 50. Now, interestingly, wasn't all bad news. The non-manufacturing activity or services activity rose to 51.4. So it actually exceeded the 50 number. And this was certainly an upside surprise. And it was boosted by travel and tourism during the Chinese New Year holiday celebration. So I think that's a real positive sign. The market is starting to, you know, given that 10% move, as you indicated, is starting to get ahead of the data here and excitement that potentially China has bottomed. And hard to say at this point. I think it's a bit early, but it is the one market that has been behaving very differently from the rest of the world. And so for people who are rotating amongst different geographies, it would be an attractive, you know, a bit of a contrarian call, but an attractive rotation away from the things that have worked really well over the last couple of years to something that hasn't. And so potentially, if you're a long-term investor, it would certainly be an opportunity that we think will eventually play out. It's just very hard to get specific on timing, because when you're in a bottoming process, that can take a long time, and it can be really, the data can really oscillate back and forth between good and bad until you have a nice trend in place.
Maybe before we leave, we've certainly had a very wide-ranging conversation today. We talked about Bitcoin. We talked about the consumer north of the border, south of the border, Chinese equities. As you're leaving the podcast, what would you leave with investors? Like, how would you interpret this, or how would you think about this going forward?
So one of the questions that I've been getting and consistently is, how will 2024 look the same or different or compared with 2023? And particularly as it pertains to equities, which is seems to be more on people's minds. And I think that I've distilled it into, there were really three drivers in 2023. One was the surprise of the resilience of the biggest economy in the world, the US, notably. And that really drove returns in sort of the first part of the year, kind of that January to May. And then in May, you know, back to your NVIDIA question, we had the big upside surprise in NVIDIA's earnings. And that was really on the back of, as I mentioned, the recognition that AI was going to be a durable trend that investors really needed to pay attention to. And not a cyclical trend, I would say. So that obviously caused a flurry in any AI adjacent industries and companies. And then the market sort of consolidated a little bit outside of a few stocks that were what we would describe as AI plays. But then at the end of October, we had the big move with the Fed pivot, and interest rates fell very quickly. Bonds actually turned into positive territory for the year, and equities surged about 16% in the last 2 months of the year, and that sort of baked the cake for a really strong year. So when I reflect on that and I think about, okay, well, how does that look for 2024? I would say the first two conditions are still firmly in place. The economy, certainly in the US, has continued to be resilient. Economies, the rest of the world, if you think about Canada and Europe, for example, are definitely weaker, but they're holding on. They're kind of in that 0 to 1% low growth place, and so I'm comfortable with the economic outlook. I think we've accepted that we're likely to execute on the soft landing. I'm also very comfortable in the durable trend and the potential for secular growth with many industries benefiting from the artificial intelligence or big data and digitization trends. And I think that's not just technology related. There's lots of industries looking at the application of AI in order to boost their own productivity or margins. So I'm good with one and two. I think the one area maybe of a little bit of uncertainty we have is on interest rates. And that's because we've started to see central bankers are really not so inclined to quickly move to cut interest rates. They're very concerned about reigniting inflation in their economies again. So they may hold on to the current level of interest rates a little bit longer. But so there's a little bit of risk there. But the most important thing for the equity investor is the equity markets do not need lower interest rates to perform. Mm. They've very much digested the current level of interest rates. I think where we have a headwind for equities is if we start to see policy rates specifically start to move higher. So in that tail risk that central bankers need to actually increase interest rates, that's where we have some headwinds for equities. But outside of that scenario, which we still would believe to be a tail risk, we think that those three conditions continue to exist to help the outlook be quite positive for equities from here.
Leslie, thank you so much for that both brief, great summary about where we're headed in 2024, as well as the more thorough analysis on a number of different topics. So thanks again for your insights.
Well, great to be here once again to discuss the recent events with you, Matt.
The content of this podcast, including facts, views, opinions, and recommendations, is not to be used or construed as investment advice and is not an offer or an invitation to buy or sell any security. The content of this podcast should not be relied upon for any purposes, and Mackenzie Financial Corporation is not responsible for any reliance upon it. This podcast includes forward-looking information that reflects our current expectations or forecasts of future events. Forward-looking information is subject to risks, uncertainties, and assumptions that could cause actual results to differ materially from those expressed herein. Our views are subject to change based on market conditions. Commissions, trailing commissions, management fees, and expenses may be associated with mutual fund investments. Please read the fund facts and prospectus before investing. The indicated rates of returns are historical annual compounded total returns, including changes to unit values and reinvestment of all dividends or distributions, and does not take into account sales, redemptions, distribution, or optional charges or income taxes payable by any security holder that would have reduced returns.